First of all, strategic dialogue has been going on for a while with civil society, but now it's institutionalizing it. We formed a working group on religion and foreign policy, and under that there are three subgroups. One is for conflict mitigation, one is for religious freedom, which I co-chair, and then there's one for development and human rights, humanitarian efforts, which Ambassador Diaz is part of. I am one of the three co-chairs, along with Undersecretary Otero and Joshua Dubois, who heads the White House Office of Faith-Based Initiatives. And then there are five different subgroups, but mine is the Working Group on Religious Freedom. Very exciting, because for the first time, what's historic about it is that civil society will be able to make suggestions that develop and that certainly deal with foreign policy to the secretary. And it's exciting. We had 50 people to launch on October 18th. And then on October 19th, we had a web chat with Ambassador Diaz and our two FACA co-chairs, Chris Seipel and Bill Vinley for Religions for Peace and Institute for Global Management, and Joe Grabowski from the Institute for Politics and Faith. And we were basically able to web chat with over 30 consulates and embassies throughout the world in terms of announcing this new initiative. It will be a year long. Each of the groups will meet four times a year. And then there's a core group of about 25 that will meet another four times out of the year. So for those who can't get to the table, we will be doing more DVCs, you know, videos around the world, more web chats. And so it's a wonderful way to introduce not only technology to the table, but it's also a chance for us to get the secretary's vision out to the larger world. So we're very excited. I'm so glad to be a co-chair and really working with Undersecretary Otero and Joshua Dubois.
Well, now you're here in Rome.
Yes.
We're talking ahead of the meeting in Assisi with the world's religious leaders.
Yes.
With many from coming around the world to that important encounter to pray and to reflect on peace. Now, they're probably not going to be expecting to talk about religious freedom at such an event. So what are you going to be taking with you to Assisi?
Well, first of all, on a personal note, my oldest son was born on the day of Assisi. So, you know, it's always wonderful. But I'm here for a week. The day of Assisi, you know, promotes international freedom and dignity and justice. And so we are partners with the Vatican and with the Pope and with the world in terms of promoting those issues. I'm here for a week-long series of dialogues with interlocutors and actors who promote religious freedom. We have common goals and shared goals in terms of freedom for every human being, which is a fundamental human right. I'll be going tomorrow as an observer, but I also interface with a lot of the faith leaders who are coming from all over the world. And so many of the countries that I will go to, many of the ambassadors who are in Washington, I sit with regarding their issues of religious freedom. So tomorrow is a day to certainly respect what will happen there, so I'll be an observer. But the rest of the week will be opportunities to dialogue with those who have come for this celebration. You know, we have found where nations have religious freedom, there's more stability. And so we want to make sure that peace and freedom are values that we want to partner with the Vatican. And so I'm here, and it's an exciting time. And then to work with my colleague, Ambassador Diaz, who is the United States Ambassador to the Holy See.
Well, now your country, my country as well,
yes,
is at the heart of what is widely seen as a religiously motivated attack on September 11th, 2001. That was almost, well, it was about 10 years ago.
It was a decade ago.
Now, after that fateful day, Pope John Paul II called the world's religious to Assisi to pray for peace and to reject the use of the name of God as a reason for conflict or violence. But can an event like Assisi actually be effective in bringing about world peace, among religions?
Well, let me say yes to the latter part of your question, but the former part of your question, I was on the front lines of 9/11, which was really where my passion was ignited to be the Ambassador for International Religious Freedom. I was at that time a police chaplain for the New York City Police Department, and so I was on the front lines of what was labeled Ground Zero.
Now, you were or are, correct me, you're a Baptist pastor.
I am a Baptist pastor by ordination, a Presbyterian by confirmation, but now an ambassador for everyone who wants to believe or not believe around the world. And so it's cross ethnicity, cross religious lines. I represent every believer in the world. But at that particular time, I was on the front lines. And so I believe that's what really ignited my passion to serve in this post, because the what happened post 9/11 was that interfaith dialogue began on a very large scale, not only in New York, but around the world. And I think Assisi represents the continuation of that. It's not just prayer, but it also is time for interfaith dialogue. You know, religion is at the center of everything that we do, at the center of human life. More than 85% of the world believes in a being larger than him or herself. And so what is exciting about the strategic dialogue and about the Day of Assisi is that we're not ignoring religion. It's a chance for religion and government to talk, not that either loses their identity, but it says, where can we find common ground? Because it does impact and influence the lives of people. So where people are free to believe, as we said, it minimizes terrorism and extremism, where and it allows people to sit at the table together and look for common ground. That's what Assisi represents. You know, when you're talking about peace, you're looking for places that we are in common ground. This morning, I was able to go to the Assisi prayer service that the Pope led. You know, there were at least 12 readings from 12 different nations, 12 different languages, and we were in one common place. You know, e pluribus unum, you know, there were many, but we are one. And I think that that's really the message that the world is really embracing and grasping now, that yes, there are differences in cultures and nationalities, but that those differences also have commonalities. And where can we find the common ground? As an ambassador, you know, that I'm a bridge builder. I'm looking for common ground. I'm looking for places where there are pragmatic openings. And so there are nations that may not be excelling in religious freedom, but it allows me to have an opening to sit down and say, where can we begin to promote? Because we're very concerned about religious minorities all over the world. Where can we begin to make some small steps that will then become bigger steps so that every human being has the right to believe or not believe what their choice is, and to have it as their choice and not mandated that they must believe a certain way because they're in a certain place. So, you know, it's a very exciting time, and Assisi just affirms and reaffirms that people are coming from all over. You know, some are called pilgrims, some are called by other names, but people are coming from all over saying, yes, we look different, we have different cultures, we speak differently, but there is one language of humanity, and that's the language of peace and freedom and dignity, and that's where we share.
What you were just saying earlier brings me to another point. Now, the State Department has designated 8 countries as countries of particular concern, which engage in or tolerate particularly severe violations of religious freedom. Now, those countries.
And egregious acts, certainly, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And those countries include some U.S. trading or strategic partners like China and Saudi Arabia.
So that could seem contradictory to some people who would like to see the United States apply more pressure on these countries to ensure greater religious freedom.
Well, you know, My role, and that's why it's so important to understand, my mandate is to look at religious freedom in those countries. You know, every country is very complex. There are economic discussions going on. There are all kinds of political discussions going on. And those are for the White House and the president and the secretary to weigh in on. My mandate is to look at the religious freedom aspects of those countries and to follow the guidance, both of the secretary and the president, as I go to those countries. And so, yeah, there are countries of particular concern that are announced, and they can be appointed at any time or designated at any time. Our secretary just redesignated these 8 countries about a month ago, and it was the 2010 International Religious Freedom Report. Now that I'm on board, there will be a 2011 International Religious Freedom Report that will be announced in the spring. And there may be other countries. But what we hope will happen before other countries are either designated is that we also give countries an opportunity to come off the list, number one. And so helping people look at ways that they can do that. And then there are other countries, certainly, that we wouldn't call them of concern, but of particular interest that also may be placed on the list. And so I work, you know, I'm mandated by Congress. I work also with the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom, or USERF. And so there are many voices that are looking also at religious freedom aspects. The secretary weighs all of the advice that's given to her, and the secretary, who is mandated by the president or given the authority by the president, will make her decision in terms of which countries for those particular violations or egregious acts of violence should be designated. So they can be designated at any time.
Okay. Well, in the Arab Spring uprisings that we've seen in the Middle East and North Africa, Christians joined Muslims in calling for freedom and democracy in those countries. But in some nations, particularly Egypt, we've seen an increase in violence against Christians. How concerned are you about that development?
Well, the United States is very concerned about all development. The Arab Spring certainly has called attention to the entire world that was going on. But there were, at the beginning of the Arab Spring, even in Egypt, Christians and Muslims who stood together and called for unity and for tolerance. So, you know, it's certainly a challenging time, but it also is a pragmatic opening time, particularly as countries are becoming more and more pro-democratic, for the United States to begin to have more dialogue, particularly in the area of religious freedom and the other areas that you shared about as well. But what we're also hoping to do is that in between these times is to also raise promising practices, because there are other places that mainstream religions have stood side by side. Liberia, for example, that's, you know, headed by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, it was the women whose voices emerged. There were Muslim and Christian women who said, enough already. We have, you know, in the violence, in the religious discrimination, and the women have led the movement for peace in that place. So even one of the women, along with Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, is now going to receive the Nobel Peace Prize. So I think that there are models, you know, around the world where it does work. And I think the Arab Spring is looking at all models in terms of what there are emerging voices in the Arab Spring that are coming forth, and many of them are religious leaders. So we are concerned about abuse and intolerance and, you know, what's happening with not only Coptic Christians, but other religious minorities around the world. And that is my task, to certainly promote religious freedom for all believers around the world.
We saw the Islamists win the recent elections in Tunisia, where the Arab Spring began. Is there any concern in the Obama administration about a swing to a more fundamentalist Islam in countries like Tunisia?
Well, we certainly will. You know, it's very recent, as we know. And so, you know, I don't have guidance on that at this particular time. But there's concern wherever there is persecution going on and egregious acts of violence. And as given guidance, you know, if that's one of the countries that I am to visit, then the secretary and the president will let me know. But beyond that, I can't speak for the administration, because we've not had a chance to, certainly since the elections, have that dialogue.
Christians in Pakistan have been particularly tried by the majority Muslim country's anti-blasphemy laws, to the extent that even a local governor was killed for attempting, or at least calling for an amendment of that law. How would you like to see that situation evolve?
Well, you know, first, I want to express and continue to express my condolences to the Taseer family. Governor Taseer was killed. Right after that, Minister Bhatti was also assassinated, who was the religious freedom minister. And so our condolences were expressed. The State Department and the president certainly have been very supportive of their families, the survivors, you know, after that. You know, blasphemy laws certainly concern us, and it is my hope to actually visit Pakistan. But what they have done in terms of advancing is certainly they've have now a Ministry of Harmony Day, and they're trying to work towards at least some efforts to reverse some of the blasphemy and discrimination laws. What we are very excited about is what we call Resolution 1618, which was a consensus reached by the OIC in Geneva last March, and I was able to present in June in Geneva, and then in July I went with Secretary Clinton to Istanbul. What Resolution 1618 is to combat discrimination and intolerance around the world, and what the Secretary has asked me to provide leadership for is the next stage of the implementation, which is now we're going to host an experts panel in Washington in December. We have the dates from the 12th through the 14th, and the counterparts in the Department of Justice and also the Department of Homeland Security will come, and we'll look at ways that governments can begin to implement tolerance and anti-discrimination behavior. And so it's, you know, each step allows for opportunities for new steps to be taken, which will hopefully one day we won't have this issue. Right now, unfortunately, my job will never be obsolete, because there is so much going on in the world. But we have to begin to have small change and lift up places where there has been positive change, like Liberia and other countries, and begin to show what modeling it looks like so that others might follow. The other exciting thing is that there are other nations who have seen our Office of International Religious Freedom and who are considering opening their own international religious freedom offices as well. So I think in 2012 and beyond, you're going to hear some exciting news because we have tried to model what it can look like. And because of our probing, because of our pragmatic openings, because of my visits and my predecessors and the secretary and the president's commitment, people are taking religious freedom seriously. That's why we're here for Assisi, because it's a day that's promoting peace, tolerance, dignity, human rights around the world. And so there's a songwriter that says, "Let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me." If I can be a player in this peace on this day of Assisi and this pilgrimage to Assisi, then that is a wonderful, wonderful testament to be left.